supporting the arts in Waterford. Showtime on WLR.
With thanks to Worldwide Wines. WLR.
Now, last weekend, the sad news came through that an absolute colossus of local amateur theatre and professional theatre and nationally as well, Mr. Gary Power, had sadly passed away. It was news that touched a hell of a lot of people, myself included, and I thought we'd give it a bit of time, we'd let the news sink in a bit, and this week we would try and do something to honour Gary's memory. So for the next hour, we're going to have some music, like the first piece of music you heard, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which of course was the opening of the 1987 Waterford Crystal Top Show that got to the national final and featured Gary heavily. And we're going to have lots more music like that over the next hour. But we also are going to have a few people in who knew Gary very well, who worked with Gary and who were friends with Gary. And we're going to spend a bit of time sharing some of the good times. And let's start off with a man who put that particular Tops of the Town show on the stage. And that is, of course, Gary's good friend, Michael Grant. Michael, you are very welcome to studio.
Thank you, Wayne.
Now, Michael, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. Yeah. And so tough on Peg, Brian, Tammy and Sean and all their partners as well.
Yeah. But we said what we were going to try and do this week is we're going to try and remember some of the, you know, the good times and the good things that Gary was involved
in. Oh, and there's a lot of them, yeah.
And you would have had a major part of that with the Tops of the Town.
I would, Wayne, yeah. We say we were in Tops for years before we met Gary, and we were always the good losers, you know?
Yeah.
So one year I decided we have to professional up a bit, and I went off to see Richie Collins, and I always smile at this. And it's 1984, and we brought Richie in, and we actually won the Tops for the first time. And so the next year I said, let's go again. We're going to get a bit better. And suddenly Gary Power was on the scene. So myself and Scal went over to his house in the Folly. And Scal always reminds me that when Gary came out, he said, did any of you see that new soap that just after starting on the television? And it was EastEnders. And that just puts a year on it, right? Because EastEnders is celebrating its 40th anniversary.
85, was it then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary came out with us and we asked him would he join the show, and that we wanted to see if we could do a little bit better. And at that time we had moved from Clover to Waterford Crystal.
Yeah, yeah.
So Gary came in and we had Richie Collins, so we were really getting good.
Yeah.
Now we had a great bunch amongst ourselves and Gary fitted in like a glove.
Mm.
You know, everyone got on, we had some great laughs. And I think that year he did Why Can't a Woman Be More Like a Man?
From My Fair Lady.
From My Fair Lady. Yeah. And he was also in Officer Krupke, which helped us give it a bit of oomph.
And of course you would have had Des Manahan that year. So
and we had Des, because Des actually played opposite Gary for that Why Can't a Woman Be More Like a Man? Anyway, we won again and went as far as the national semis. Gary now was on board. He was part of us. And we were socialising together, and one of my fondest memories of Gary and Gary's time around this is I used to go for a pint with my dad to the tavern on the Lower Yellow Road.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, after work, Gary would call up and then someone else would call in. And we began to develop a thing called the 5:30 Club on a Saturday evening. And a few of the sensible people went home and a few obviously didn't. We were in 1986 then, and we were all good friends now at this stage. So we were all planning together. I brought in the Malumbies to do the choreography.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were really going to give this 1986 a shot.
And he did?
We did, yeah. And Gary was such a major part of that. He was in the comedy at the opening. He did It's Not Where You Start, It's Where You Finish, which was a big number for us. Then he stood out in Sit Down.
You're rocking the boat,
yeah. But he was outstanding. And that kind of, that year we gave him a bash at comedy then as well. And he went into a sketch with Davey and Nicky Cummins. And it was the long stretch sketch.
I remember, the big long arms. Yeah.
And I remember even going to Dublin, or I think Gary got a throat infection. And Lee McCann had to give him an emergency injection.
Ooh.
to make sure that it didn't close up on him. But there was never anything as, I'm sick, I can't go.
Or, oh, he was doing it and that was it.
100%. Yeah. Myself and Gary then, which I'm kind of proud of this thing, and I'm sure if he was sitting there, he'd be proud himself. we started the first stage school.
I'm glad you said that, because this Grand Power School of Performing Arts,
that's it.
This is legendary in town, but what was it?
Well, it was me and Gary
running
classes upstairs in Bill Martin's.
Yeah.
So we got together enough money to put a mirror on the whole end wall in that room
which
upstairs.
Stayed there the whole time, I remember.
Yeah.
It was there for years after.
So we ran that for a while. I mean, I'm sure there's some people out there who actually attended it. I actually think
Ray Collins. You did, yeah.
So, sorry, Ray. Hope I'm not destroying your reputation.
You're continuing the tradition of Ray Collins being mentioned every single week on this programme.
Well, he was there with us. So the following year, then, we were back in Tops with Waterford Crystal. And unfortunately, that was the year Richie died. And I think that bonded us all an awful lot, because Richie was such an affectionate guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone loved him. Do you remember a thing called Edwin Drood?
I do. Yeah, there you are.
So there you are. So we did this kind of unusual opening, and Gary played a major role in that. But now we had Carrie Crowley. Now we had Pat McAvoy. Now we had Toby
Hickey.
Now we had Martina. But Gary still stood out on that show when he did La Cage aux Folles.
Yeah.
And remember, 1987.
Well, before its time.
Yeah. And even some of the lads, some of the dancers in that were guys, all dressed in as females.
Yeah, yeah.
But he did that really so well. I always loved watching it. It was great. So again, we got to a final with that show, and we had a lot of laughs along the way. But once again, we had to cry up in Dublin somewhere and after it. We decided, or at least I decided, that at this stage now, I had two children and my third child was on the way. So I said, I can't do a show or she'll run away on me. I took a break. Now, Gary's family are listening. I apologise if I get dates wrong, but at this stage, Gary was going into Bunratty.
Okay.
And he slowly but surely was going a different route. We came back and did Tops in 89. I actually don't think Gary was in the 89 show. But he was back in 1990. I think he was Dr. Doolittle
in the other one.
And slowly but surely, he was definitely going down a more professional route. And then for me, we kind of diverged after 1992, because I had three children and I needed to start making sure I was earning money properly.
Of course.
So I disappeared for 15 years into business as such. I didn't arrive back doing anything locally until early 2000s, when I caught up with Gary again. And we started looking at doing a variety thing, but everything had changed in that 15 years. People in Waterford who were kids watching us in Tops were now professionals. Gary himself was a professional. So it was a much different world, and I was kind of on the outside poking in a bit. But I mean, we enjoyed it. We did it for 2 or 3 years, and I suppose a lot of good things came from it. We renewed a friendship, and we also probably kick-started the Bilberry Goats out of it. I do remember that he was in other things himself. Scal and Davey, we had a great bond. They were in Denny Cochran's Panto.
Yeah.
And the most famous tree, and I remember I did laugh a lot at this, was Diesel, Blister and Melancholy.
They were the Old King Cole.
They were three right
black guards. 1985, yeah.
That wasn't 85.
It was 1985.
So that was right in the middle of all art.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
But it's fair to say he was a huge part of everything that you did on the national stage,
As well as the local stage. I mean, he brought us up. Like, his performances brought all the other lads up.
Yeah.
Because they loved working with, and he was so easy to work with.
Yeah.
So all those memories. And it's funny when I heard the news about Gary that they're the instant thoughts.
Yeah, the good thoughts, the great
they're
thoughts.
They're the memories.
Yeah. Michael, thanks a million for your time.
No bother, Wayne.
Now, I am delighted to welcome another good friend of Gary's to the studio now, and it is Mr. Jim Nolan. Jim, you're very welcome to studio.
Thank you, Wayne.
And thanks for coming in on, I suppose, a very sad occasion, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I've been in here a few times with you over the years and in happier times. I was talking to Gary just the day before he went on holidays, and he was chiding me because I hadn't seen him since before Christmas. And he invented a new word for me. He said, "You'd need to come down soon." He said, "I'll be suffering from palsiety."
pals.
And that's the last word that Gary and I exchanged. Pals, and, yeah.
So tell us, Jim, when did you first come across the legend, I suppose, the legend. It was Gary Bearer?
The first time I saw Gary on stage, I knew of him, but I didn't know of him. I knew nothing about him. I went to see a production by Brother Ben of Fiddler on the Roof. And I remember he was playing Tevye and Carrie was in it, Carrie Crowley.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew neither of them at the time. And just remember being terribly struck by a very, very fine production. And these two leads were terrific. And at that stage, I was only, I think, starting out in the theatre myself. So I must have made some mental note of it. But I didn't get to know Gary until long after that. But certainly he left a very strong first impression, as Carrie did. Yeah.
And I guess it was more when he got into the drama end of things was when he became more...
Yeah, I would have been familiar with his work in the musicals. Our paths didn't cross that often. I don't go to as many of them as I should. And that's simply a matter of time. You can't be at all the dances.
It's a matter of taste too.
I wouldn't say that. But I was very familiar with the work and also got to know Gary socially a bit. I knew his uncle Noel very well. And so I was getting to know him and was familiar with his work. But it was when, I think in the 2000s that I became a lot closer to him. I remember seeing a really wonderful production in Garter Lane that he directed for his own production company, Gary Power Productions. And that was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No, that was 2009.
Was it?
And that's how that was etched in my memory as well, because I had moved on from a band I was playing with for a long time with Avalon. And I remember that Christmas, Gary phoning me and saying, I have a lot of work coming up over the next, you know, year or two with his own company.
Yeah.
And would you come in and help with the sound and stuff like that? And that was the first one.
Oh,
one
I didn't know that.
Cuckoo's Nest. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he revived your career.
Well.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. But what I do remember was it was a really, really good production of a play, because it's so associated with the Jack Nicholson and the movie.
Of course.
It was a tough one to take on, and he did a great job with it and had a great cast. I remember people like Mick Quinlan and Shona Farrell and Greta was in it. And did Vicky take over in another?
Vicky, there was a rerun of it then later in the year, I think, and Vicky took the role.
It was really terrific. And I know at the time Gary was really keen to know, well, Jim, what did you think? Because we used to slag one another over this sort of so-called imagined barrier between what he called the straight drama and the musical world, And for me, entertainment is entertainment. But he was always curious to know and keen to know. It was lovely to be able to say, hand on heart, what a fine production that was.
That was a great production.
And I also remember seeing, when you might help me with the dates, I think in and around the same time, slightly later, Shirley Valentine.
With Linda Goff, that would have been 2011? 2010, right. 2010.
Yeah. And in that same period, again, I saw that one in Garter Lane. Linda was terrific, and it was a beautiful production.
Yeah.
And again, another movie that became a play, or a play that became a movie.
Willie Russell,
and now
he
was doing the. Yeah, and it was a tricky one to pull off, because it's so associated these days with the movie. At the time, rather, it was associated with the movie, and the movie had left such a mark that he was a brave man, and Linda was very brave to take it on, and they did a great job.
And he also took it, and he ran it in tandem with another Willie Russell play during the summer. He'd done a summer season in Theatre Isle, which was kind of unheard of, really. Yeah.
Was that Stags and Hens?
No, it was Blood Brothers, the play.
Yeah.
Blood Brothers and Shirley Valentine ran one week after the other for the whole summer.
He was a busy man.
He was a very busy man.
Yeah, and he got even busier, I think, the following year. Again, you might be able to help me with the date. And I have a particular reason for remembering this one.
I was just going to say 2011, he took on Your Own Play.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that was, again, a Gary Power production. And he approached me about it. And because the play had won its very first production, was the first Red Kettle production. And then I know that Liam Marr and Denny Corcoran teamed up to do a very fine WDS production of it. I can't remember the dates, but it was certainly before this one, the Gary's one. But it's a play that I'm always sort of careful about letting out again. One is you don't want it done too often. But also because, truthfully, even though it's sort of landmark in terms of Red Kettle, the play was way too long.
Now tell us what the play is.
Sorry, did I not say it? It was The Gods Are Angry, Miss Carr. The Gods Are Angry, Miss Carr. And The thing that I always regretted about it was that I didn't first time out back in the 80s do a proper edit of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I joked, with TV Honan and I used to joke that we would give out sleeping bags with the tickets. The first production was so long. And so I didn't get a chance when Denny and Liam were doing it for WDS. I was working on something else and I didn't have the time. I encouraged the lads to do some minor editing. Mm. But when Gary approached me, I was really keen to address the text again. And I asked Gary if I could take it on. And he was delighted that I was taking a look at the text. And we teamed up together and we did a very good edit. Unfortunately, Gary wasn't able to stay with the planned production. I think he was going up the country to do something else.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
And he asked me if I would take it on. And so I directed it. But actually what I inherited, as best I can remember, is very many of the cast that Gary had assembled or was assembling for the production. And like, they were terrific. They were really terrific.
In that there was. Yeah, Megan Cassidy was in
Megan,
it.
Katie Honan, Pascal Scott, Andrew Holden,
David Flynn. Yeah.
Yeah, it was... It was a really good production. I hope I haven't left anyone out there, but I don't think so. Gary couldn't do the production, but he could come back to the opening night.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was this time, it was my turn to be nervous because it was still, as far as I was concerned, I was directing his company's production of the play. And he didn't sit in the front row, but he might as well have.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know he was very proud of that. And it was a great partnership to have. And I was delighted to have worked with them on that. And we became a lot closer after it. I don't think we ever worked directly together again, but we became very good friends.
The night that we did a concert for Gary, a kind of a celebration night back in, was it 2019 in Theatre Isle?
Yes, indeed.
And you spoke that night. You wrote a lovely piece. I'm not asking you to remember the piece verbatim.
Sure.
But it was about how Gary found his interest in shows. Could you give us maybe a little...
Yes. I remember hearing from Peggy or from Gary the story of how you'll help me with the dates, I think it was 1974.
I think it was 74, yeah.
It was again a landmark production of Jesus Christ Superstar, which I saw. I was a bit older than Gary, but I remember going to see it and being, you know, absolutely astonished by it. It was terrific. And I think Denny was playing Judas.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
Patsy was playing Jesus Christ Superstar. It's a fantastic production. But in the audience that night was a 10-year-old Gary Power. And the following evening, I think it was, down in the place where they lived at the time, where the Power family lived, Gary, the 10-year-old, invited his family into the sitting room, I think it was, and staged his one-man version of Jesus Christ Superstar. And I think it was the introduction was something like, he didn't have the word ladies and gentlemen. So it was ladies and gentlemen.
I can just hear.
I probably have the detail of that mixed up, but I know for sure it was that production left a huge impression on him, and as it did on me. But it was Gary's sort of kickoff point, I don't think he ever forgot that. Yeah,
Jim, thanks very much for coming in and sharing your memories.
Thank you.
Now, another long-term collaborator and great friend of Gary's was choreographer Michelle Condon, and Michelle joins me in studio now. Michelle, we've been in studio under, I suppose, better conditions than this one.
Yeah, we have. More joyous times in the memories and looking back of all the great times with Gary.
And there were a lot of great times. So you told me during the week a funny story about the first time you were on stage with Gary.
Oh, goodness, yeah. I knew Gary from being on stage, going to see the Pantomime Societies back in the day and the early Tops years. But I think it was 1983 and De La Salle Musical Society were doing the Gypsy Baron, and there was a big ballet scene in it. So there was a call out to the local ballet school, which I was involved in.
So you got flung in head first.
So I got flung in head first there. And then Ray Jeffries was the producer and he was amazing, but he was into, you know, the big tableaus, the big pictures at the end of scenes. So his idea was that I ended up on somebody's shoulders downstage right, and it happened to be Gary. And I don't think I like roller coasters or heights since then, because Gary was so tall and I was so small at the time. And here I was, and they were trying to get me up on his shoulders and I could not move. So I was petrified. So I don't do heights since then. I think they went to plan B. I think I might have been on Toby Hickey's shoulders, who was slightly smaller.
One thing that you have in common with me as well, I suppose, is we were both in shows with Gary directing us, and then we were both in shows with Gary.
Yes.
Actually, no, you have that one on me. You were in shows with Gary.
I was in shows with Gary, yes.
And then went on to work with Gary.
That's yeah. It was amazing. Like, so, you know, the De La Salle School Show is, you know, an institution.
Yeah.
And Gary was hugely involved with that from its inception. And I was in The Music Man in 1986 and Gary was in it, and Tara
Shapoopy.
And I was Shapoopy. Mary Aylward actually used to call me, her nickname for me was Shapoopy. And we were in that, and what a great time we had in that. And then a couple of years later, I started getting asked to do shows, I suppose. And I was on stage, yeah, in De La Salle Musical Society. So I danced with there, and I was his Liat in his South Pacific.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I got involved with Spotlight, Premier Productions. So Gary was directing. And I was involved there. And so we worked side by side with that particular group. And also then I was a long number of years doing the De La Salle show with Gary, side by side. We even did one show in Carlo once.
I remember that. I was there as well.
Yeah. Didn't have a great experience. So I said, I'm never going outside the country again.
The city, Michelle. City, not the country.
City. Outside the city again. I couldn't be coping with that, going on a bus on at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. But, you know, we had good times, yeah. But I learned so much from him.
And one thing I don't think we've said a lot about is his sense of humour. He could actually reduce an entire room to hysterics.
Oh, look, he was
I know we can't repeat a lot of them now.
No, absolutely, absolutely not. But the fun, and even when there was, you know, things that go wrong in shows or people's lives, he was just able to put a twist on it or say something and it just got you back on track. He was a very kind person. And I just remember, you know, up in his house or whatever, and he loved cuddly toys and, sorry, but he had such a soft side to him, you know.
And
you
maybe
know,
not many people saw that being in the show.
Absolutely. And he was always a champion of, you know, in the De La Salle shows, there would be always some of the girls or the lads that weren't frontline people. Yeah. But he'd always say, oh, that'll be good now. We'll give them a chance.
Give them a chance.
Give them a chance. It rubbed off on me too then, because I was an apprentice.
Yeah.
You know, he knew me so well. Some people know me from the eyebrow raise. You know.
Take over.
But if I started twisting my hair at rehearsals, Gary often said to me, he might say, oh, we might change such a thing, or I need you to do that. And he'd see me twisting my hair deep in thought and he'd go, I might ask her next week to change that. I'm going to get it. He just knew me.
So, Michelle, if I was to ask you for one song that you would associate with Gary, what comes to mind?
Well, there's the obvious ones that everybody, you know, everyone has their one that their defining song with Gary, but Le Cage aux Folles. And didn't he do that in Tops?
He did.
In the most magnificent turquoise dress and owned the stage on the Gaiety as well, wasn't it? So, I Am What I Am.
And I think the last time that we saw Gary perform on stage, he sung I Am What I Am. Back at the Celebration concert
that we did back in
COVID.
And wasn't it great that actually happened?
Absolutely.
You know, in when the person's there.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
They get to hear the applause and be part of a celebration. Mm. And that's just lovely.
And our last guest for this evening is Gary's good friend, the legendary musical director, brother Benedict Hanlon, otherwise known as Ben to friends. Ben, you're very welcome to studio.
Thanks, Wayne.
You were a huge part of where Gary started, really, weren't you, in the world of musical theatre?
Maybe Gary was a huge part of where you started.
When you started together, didn't you?
We did. I came, my first show was Jesus Christ Superstar, was in 1980. And Gary was Mary Magdalene in that. We kind of still remember that, with sometimes with fun, because he was a very convincing Mary Magdalene and played the part brilliantly. So we actually started together. He was in fifth year out and I was just coming in as a teacher in De La Salle. Yeah. It was my first year there.
It was obvious, wasn't it, from a very early age that Gary wasn't just going to be somebody who was going to be in a cast. Like, he was going to want to other things.
Absolutely. Like, he played that part brilliantly, the Mary Magdalene, and he was, even at that stage, really professional in the way he went about everything. And he and Sean Melody were great mates. Sean, I think, saw the potential in Gary as an actor, but also as a producer very, very early on. So our next show then was Oliver. I don't think Gary was involved in that. That was 81. But then he had a leading part in Fiddler on the Roof, which was in 1982, and himself and Carrie played the Golda and the Tevye, and went on to do it. I think it was twice more. I'm pretty well certain they did that three times in all for us.
Yeah.
And Gary was a superb actor. He played the part of Tevye in that. He was brilliant. And that's why, you know, when it came to doing Fiddler again, we asked him, himself and Carrie, to do it again. It was 1982. But Sean had seen his interest, Gary's interest in production and directing. I think pretty well after Fiddler, from Oklahoma, My Fair Lady, South Pacific, Gary would have been co-director with Sean for many of those shows before he took them over completely. Of course, he also had the leading part in My Fair Lady. Probably one of my favourite shows, if I went back as a show. It was beautiful. I loved just the whole style of it. And Gary was superb in that as Higgins. He was brilliant. And so he was a brilliant actor. He had all of that. And maybe that was why, when it came to him directing and producing shows, that he could work with people. He knew. He had the craft himself. He was really good in terms of acting himself. So he knew exactly what he wanted people to do for particular parts, how he wanted them to act a part. But he was also able to get that across to the young people. Yeah. And I think kind of what himself and Brendan Drohan, God rest him, and Sean, what they set up really in De La Salle over those years was a little cradle for people who would have never acted before, many of them. Many was their first opportunity, but many of them went on to brilliant and great things. I mean, I think of Brian Flynn, and I would think of Andrew McLaughlin, I think of Jamie Beamish. You know, many of them went on to become professionals, and very, very, very capable professionals.
Yeah.
Keith Dunphy, similarly. They all started in our shows, and I kind of put it down to Gary and Sean and Brendan. They were very professional. And I said this to somebody only last week at our show last week. I used to dread nights during the show when Sean would declare we'd be having a meeting up in John's Hill in his house that could go on until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and we'd be there, you know, going through every facet of the show, and it'd be the props and it'd be the costumes and every single thing. And I found that tough, and had many a row with Sean about it, because that was the nature of them. Like, I kind of felt, look, let's get it done and sure, it'll be grand on the night. Yeah, but they weren't having any of it. They wanted every detail.
But, you know, I think that's why, when you look back at, as I call it, that kind of golden age, when there was the Edmund Dry Society, the De La Salle Senior Society, and there was the De La Salle College Musical in Theatre Isle. The De La Salle College Musical was that good and that highly regarded that it was one of the three that you didn't miss in the year, because you knew the standards you were getting.
Yeah, and you're right. And we got invited into the International Opera Festival in 1984 with My Fair Lady. And later on, I think it was
89,
was it, with How to Succeed?
Yeah.
We did it again. Like, they were super shows. They really were. You know, and we went and we fared pretty well in the International Festival as kind of young people. It was a great chance for the youngsters to, like, it just meant so much to them. was unbelievable. But you're right, it was that those standards were there and they were maintained. And yeah, the shows cost a bit of money as time went on. But Sean in the earlier years believed that, you know, the main thing was to put a good show on. And if he needed help, he just went looking for it. And then the payback was the dinner in the candlelight in Dunmore East when the show was over. I'm sure Gary was probably doing it for half nothing. I was never too involved in the money side of it. But that wasn't important for him. And I was told a wonderful story just last week, which I thought was brilliant, from Jane Kennedy, who's involved with the Bilberry Goats.
But Jane will be very quiet and shy and retiring, yeah.
And Jane grew up on the Folly, close to Gary, and the families were very, very close and were good friends. And she said, when they were just kids, Gary would have them all to come into their garage, and Peggy, Gary's mom, would set up a curtain, and they'd go in behind the curtain, and then the curtain would be pulled, they'd have to come out and dance and do their stuff, and Gary would be there telling them no, they needed to move their hands or their legs quicker, or their diction wasn't clear enough. I just thought it was brilliant. But I think as well, you know, a thing I often think, Wayne, that's important for me as a blow-in that came kind of, well, from Dublin in 1979, like Waterford, and we forget it, I think, and it continues to be as good. The Waterford I came to had a phenomenal tradition. The tradition coming from the tops of the town, from the local societies, which you mentioned there, from the bands before that, with the Royal Show Band and so on, and the brass bands and military band we have in Waterford. Like, the tradition of music in Waterford, it's different to other places. Mm. And that's why Gary was in the back, in the garage doing that, because he probably was brought to tops of the town. He probably had seen stuff and he wanted to do the same.
Yeah.
And that continues in our town today. And I think thanks to people like Gary and Sean Melody and Brendan Drone and many, many, many others, but they were the ones I knew who kind of then went themselves on stage and performed and then produced and made things possible for other people.
Well, Ben, we could talk for hours.
We could talk for hours,
but thanks a million for coming in and sharing your memories.
Thank you. Thank you, and may Gar rest in peace.
Well, that's just about all we have time for on this week's Showtime podcast. As always, if you want to go to WLRFM.com, you can check out the full tribute to Gary with all the music in there. And in the first hour, we had loads of Irish music and Paddy Wackery going on. So as usual, I'd highly recommend paying a visit to WLRFM.com. You can find all of our other shows there as well, right across the schedule, all available for playback. And quite a few have little podcast ones that you can subscribe to as well. Just like this one that you can subscribe to on your favourite podcast player. Just search for Showtime WLR. You'll find it there. Give us a subscribe and this will automatically download every week to your device of choice. And that's it for this week. And I'll talk to you all same time next week.
Supporting the arts in Waterford. Showtime on WLR.
With thanks to Worldwide Wines. WLR.